What is going on, guys? Welcome to the roll up. It is W launch day. Wormhole just launched their token. We are super hyped. We're talking to Robinson of all about it. We're going to be going through what the token means to the ecosystem, give you guys a complete rundown on what to expect going forward, the functionality, the mechanism, and Wormhole in general. So, Robinson, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today, and pleasure to dig into everything Wormhole.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really excited to be here. Big day. Lots of good things happening, and it's the culmination of honestly 3 years of really hard work from a lot of people. So really exciting, and I don't want to be cliche, but I'll say it. It's definitely just the beginning.
We're still so early.
All the mad lads. All the mad lads are very happy. And I've been using the NFT token distribution as a means to kind of explain to other projects, like, hey guys, Wormhole did a pretty good job of this. And I think, like, with the, specifically with like the vesting stuff as well, I don't want to get too deep into it before kind of, just unpacking it. So why don't you talk about, the decisions that you've made, with regards to launching the W coin. And how you guys thought about this, as well as the kind of distribution process?
Yeah, absolutely. So this process, believe it or not, you see a tweet, right? And you get a big announcement. It's great, but you don't actually understand like the months of hard work that went into making it happen. So we started a lot of this work probably like 4 or 5 months before the actual. When everything went live with the drop, and a lot of the work was focused on chain, specifically how do we make sure the users that have used Wormhole for the past 3 years are the ones that ultimately are going to get rewarded, and not the ones there may be people that get upset about this, but like not the ones that are ultimately like farming the protocol, right? So our ultimate goal with this was, how do we reward historic users when, they're using it because there's product market fit, there's a reason why, and they had no expectation for a token. And so that's like goal number one. And then I would say goal number two is, how do you use this opportunity to help build a broader and larger community? And I think for like interoperability protocols in particular, we're at this like interesting intersection, quite literally an intersection where we connect all these chains. And chains do a really good job of having like these echo chambers, right? Like where the community can like compounds on each other. Anything on Solana, like it compounds, and people love Solana. Same thing with ETH, L2s, and so on. But like interop protocols are like the connection between all these two. And so as we were going through this, we have our like classic Wormhole community, but like how can we build that bigger with all these chains that we actually are involved with in a meaningful capacity? And so the best way to do that that we kind of identified was these, strong NFT communities. They're like the beachheads of these chains, right? Like we can probably have a discussion now and argue, go back and forth on what we think is, the best NFT projects on each chain. But like, let's just say a Mad Lads on Solana, since we were chatting about this, or you could say a Pudgies or a Zuki or Punks on Ethereum. You could say, Bad Kids on Cosmos, et cetera, right? But the idea behind this is like, they're really good, strong representations of like the loyal users of those ecosystems. So for us, number one, like I said, the goal was, how do we reward, most importantly, the on-chain users? They got over 80%, right, of the actual drop. And then how do we also use this as an opportunity to, build a bigger and stronger community? So that's like the high level thesis behind it, with a lot of, Sybil algorithm work to try and make sure we weren't rewarding the farmers too much.
Yeah, there is a strong tie to identity that these NFT communities have. And a lot of times that's the signaling that happens, is you signal that you're part of the Cosmos hub by having a Bad Kid, or you signal that you're part of the Solana community by having a Mad Lad. So it makes a lot of sense to involve those communities as a core part of this interop protocol that ties not only these chains together, but these communities together. And now this token is gonna play an integral role in tying both these chains and these communities together once again. So could you explain like what the mech, like how does the token integrate into the wormhole ecosystem? What is its role? What is the W token's role in this, yeah, in this wormhole world?
Yeah, I'll take like a brief step back and then get into that. So I think for, we're really proud of like how long we've been around, and like what we've kind of accomplished from a technical perspective, as well as I would say like a commercial or growth perspective, right? When you take a step back, Wormhole connects over 30 plus chains across 5 runtimes. That's very hard to do. A lot of interoperability protocols maybe across 1, maybe 2. And so for us, we kind of view in a way, if I were to use an analogy, it's like these like railroad tracks across all of all these different chains. And it's almost like a requirement for all of them to, you know, work together, be composable, if I can use, you know, a good buzzword here. And so when you think about it like that, our goal is actually to continue to fall to the background. Like you'll have bridging apps, you'll have cross-chain swaps, you'll have everything aggregated in the wallet. You actually shouldn't know that you're using Wormhole. That means we're doing a good job. And so when you think about it through that lens, it becomes like this, almost like a public good of sorts, where it's this thing that's connecting all these chains. It's in the background. You don't know you're using it as a user, but you have to trust it. And so for us, we feel like that amplifies even more the need for it to be like in the hands of users and the decision-making in the hands of users. So I think the thing here, there's no like silver bullet answer, right? Like this is for a lot of token launches, how it kind of progresses. But for us, you know, governance can't be understated, specifically for like a protocol of this magnitude and that connects so much. So, you know, eventually, very much so at the start, we'll be rolling out governance to make key decisions around contract upgradability, the networks we connect to, various products that we have built around Wormhole, decisions around those. But I think what's really interesting, and one thing we're maybe like a little bit of a alpha here, is like we feel like it's important to also have multi-chain governance. So Wormhole, most protocols you vote from one chain. And we think it's really important for you to be able to vote from any chain, especially for an interoperability protocol, something that like, you know, it could be on Solana, it could be on Ethereum, on L2s. Like wherever the user is, we want to meet them where they are. So wherever they hold, you know, their W, their stake in the network, they can vote from there. So something that we're working on, and we'll kind of have a phased rollout of this, is what does multi-chain governance look like? And we think it's, like I said, critical for like an interop protocol to have something like that.
Yeah. Are you thinking about incentives for users who participate in governance and continue to use Wormhole as well in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think there's a lot of good research out there around like governance incentives and how essentially you need it. so I definitely think it's something we're considering. We've got an entire research team here at the foundation that's leading a lot of the governance charge in particular. And, you know, I'll say yes, for the most part, when that rolls out, it won't be live at launch. Right now, our focus and priority is making sure that a user can vote from essentially, or hopefully eventually, any chain.
Yeah, very cool. How else do you see, other than governance, the Wormhole token kind of being a part of the Wormhole ecosystem?
Yeah. It's actually really, it's fun. I think a lot of, that's like a weird way to explain it, but, and I'll explain why. Like when we think about like tokenomics, there's a lot of tokenomics models around chains, right? Like how the token plays in securing the network, fees, things like that. Same things with apps, right? Like how the token plays in governance, you know, fees, et cetera. For interoperability protocols, it's like really this new design space. I think a lot of people could be like, oh, you know, just charge a fee when you bridge, right? Like, okay, sure, maybe we can do that. But there's like a lot of other interesting things we could do, and I don't want to spill too much, you know, information for others. But you know, you could essentially, let's say you wanted to connect to the network, right? You're a blockchain, you're not connected to the Wormhole network, and for Wormhole, one connection, like if you connect to Wormhole, you connect to all the other networks we're connected to. So that's super valuable, right? Like it's like all of a sudden you have connection to all this liquidity, all these users. And so there could be an opportunity to say, hey, I want to be part of the network, you know, and you could stake to have a slot on the network, right? We also have
like core primitives like messaging, right? That's effectively what we are. But there's pull-based messaging we've recently launched. Easiest mental model for this is it's like an on-chain API call. Like you want to pull something that's happened from this chain and like verify that state on another chain. And you could, if I were to put it even further, you have a game on Solana. On that game, you want to make sure someone has a pudgy penguin, but they're pudgy penguins on ETH. So you could essentially do a query. You could say like, does this person have this pudgy penguin on ETH? Okay, yes, brings it back. And then you know, that individual can like enter that room in the game, if you will. Now, when we think about the token, you know, there's an opportunity to have an API model maybe, right? Like how do you figure out how to, you know, charge for something like that? And so I'm kind of just like giving, I know I'm painting broad strokes and not getting super like detailed, and that's by design, because these are things we're going to be rolling out with. And I think, like I said, I think the team's really excited because there hasn't been like really in-depth and interesting, in our opinion, interop tokenomics. And so we're hoping to kind of be the bleeding edge on some of that.
Very, very cool. And I think this leads to like a more abstracted future, which in a user experience world means so much. Like when it comes from liquidity, having bridge transactions behind the scenes, or even to gaming, right? Where you get this cool crossover between Mad Lads, but if you also have a pudgy penguin, you get into like this more exclusive room. I think there's like a lot of fun and creative things to do there. I wanna go kind of double down on one thing that you said about like staking to enter the network. Because I think that's a really, really interesting aspect of these interoperability protocols. And I'm curious, like, if you think about that, is that now like almost like its own L1? Is that like now like you have slashing when someone stakes and you become like a proof of stake network? Is that kind of where you're thinking, or is there some trade-offs that would maybe take away from Wormhole, the interoperability protocol, and your bread and butter?
Yeah, it's a good thought exercise. I would actually, so there's an ecosystem that doesn't get a lot of love, but I think they have a lot of really good tech, and it's the Polkadot ecosystem. And they have an interesting model, and I actually think it's going away, not because of the model itself, but there's other technical reasons. They call their app chains parachains, right? And so we'll just say app chains. Like the app chain, to have like a lease on the network, you have a slot on the network. For them, it's like security. The value is like I can essentially have like this giant proof of stake network secure over 1 billion X, Y, and Z of economic security. And you can, I think it's like you it's called a crowd loan or something like that, but you essentially can like lease a slot on the network. And so I think it would be a similar concept to that. So we wouldn't necessarily say like, oh, you did something bad, and we slash the tokens that are obviously locked in that contract. But I think it's an opportunity to set it, the value for them is different, right? It's not actual economic security. It's how do I tap into all these users? How do I tap into all this liquidity? And that would be with a connection with Wormhole. But I don't know necessarily if there would be an opportunity to say like, hey, network, you know, you didn't do the right thing here, slash you. But I think the one thing that you bring up a good point is that eventually, and we can get into the modular conversation later, but eventually like verification of interoperability, right? So like how each interoperability protocol comes to some sort of consensus on any message, eventually that will be modularized. You could have some sort of staking mechanism like a proof of stake mechanism for consensus like an Axelar. You could have the Guardian network, you could have ZK and so on. And I think there'll be more of an opportunity for W to play a role like you're talking about now than, you know, a network having a lease on the Wormhole network.
And I think these are the really fun like thought experiments where like, yes, W starts out as a governance token, but then there's all these cool, interesting, whether it's used for consensus or it's used for whatever, like that's where I think there's like a lot of design space and a lot of fun to have here. I want to tie in like something that happened recently, which is Blast, and they like are having some issues there. And so I'm curious, as far as like, what if, you know, Blast was to stake some W, they were to like enter the ecosystem, but then something happens on their chain. You don't want to let that contagion, if you will, leak into all these other chains. So, you know, it seems like W is going in this more decentralized, more permissionless direction. But it's still very important to make sure that it maintains all of the economic security properties that are inherent to a lot of these layer ones. So could you just kind of like talk about how like in this mechanism, you know, maybe we get to permissionlessness eventually, but yeah. How do you maintain economic security in that realm?
Yeah. And there's a few things I can touch on, especially in regards to the Blast situation. But
I think it's helpful to just like take a step back and understand like wormhole security, right? So Wormhole has a model that we call the Guardian model, but it's essentially 19 validators. The Guardian's the branded term, and it's a proof of authority consensus, right? These validators are the most reputable staking companies in the business, right? You have like your Chorus One, your Figment, your P2P, Rockaway X is joining. And 13 out of 19 of them have to come to consensus on every single message that goes through Wormhole. That is our most popular verification method today. And we can get into what we're doing kind of tomorrow, if you will, but that is live and scaled across 30 plus chains. So that's how Wormhole kind of maintains security today. However, when we think about like interoperability, one thing I think is important that a lot of people mix together is actually, and I hate to like add more layer conversation, but really the way you should think about it is the messaging, or some people call it the transport layer, and the asset layer, right? So like Wormhole at its core is just sharing state between chains. It's saying like it waiting for finality on ETH, then pushing that state via the Guardians and sending that to Solana, right? That core primitive is like what interoperability really is. You have these two systems that can interoperate. However, the model people immediately think about, because it has such product market fit, is the asset layer, right? So most people will just kind of combine the two, and it makes sense. But really, I think it, like, if we're really going to get kind of like technical about it, it makes the most sense to separate them. And so I think from like a Blast perspective, or from an asset layer perspective, I think it's really important to have security features in place that can prevent, like, let's call it contagion, right? Like, This individual now has X amount of hacked funds, and they can take those across all on-chain networks. How does that work? So there's a lot of applications built on Wormhole. The most popular one is not the most popular, but one of the more famous ones is Portal, right? Portal, Tubuild plus TVL, lots of people use it, and it's been around for a very long time. That we have security features out of the box, two of them in particular, that can help solve a situation like that. So one of them is called the governor. So the governor is literally, the way I would think about it, is like a rate limiter between chains. Like, let's say you wanted to send $20 million from Sui to Solana. Like, let's say the Guardian set this and vote on it. You can only send 5 mil every 24 hours, right? So the idea would be, and I'm sorry, I'm getting a call, guys. I'm muting it. But, So anyway, like back to what I was saying, like we separate out the messaging, we separate out the asset layer, but what features do we have at the asset layer to make sure something happens on Blast? Like, how does that not blast everywhere else? And I think it's some of these out of the box security features. So it's the governor, it's the, we limit flow between chains. So that, like, I don't know how much, 60 odd million, right? Like, that can't be transferred off because they would hit the limit. Or we have something called the global accountant. So not a lot of people know this, and I won't, you know, go too deep into it, but we launched a chain in the Cosmos ecosystem. That chain effectively gives us a ledger, like a blockchain does. And so what we're able to do is we're able to verify transactions twice. So essentially, like, any transaction that happens on the smart contract on Blast, we can double check on this ledger. And if there's something off in the accounting system there, is it one-to-one? We can cut a connection. Right. So that would be the case of like an infinite mint error or something like that. But this in particular, the governor, I think, would be a very interesting, I would say, solution to potentially solving some contagion issues off Blast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the separation of the layers is very important for people to understand. But I'm just going to pick at you a bit, because I think that like there's exponential use cases for asset transfers in blockchain, and much less use cases for messaging transfers in blockchain. What's kind of the response to that?
Great question. So I'm not even going to like lie and say that that's you know, try and tell you that that's not the truth. It absolutely is, right? That the asset layer is like 80% of use cases today. However, we're starting to see more and more messaging use cases. The one I will instantly refer to because I think it's like one of the best, I would say, use cases for kind of product market fit when it comes to like interoperability protocols to expand your business is Pith. Pith is probably the second, I would say, most popular and widely used Oracle, like very up and coming. Pith, for those of you who aren't familiar, started on Solana. It secured like 90% of the TVL at the time. Wormhole and Pith was very much so a natural fit because it was like, hey, we've got this really good, this really powerful Oracle. It uses you know, this high fidelity, low latency data from all of these financial firms, brings it on chain, and then you know, provides that in DeFi. What we ended up doing was saying, like, how do we get Pith to go to all these other chains? And essentially, like, long story short, Pith utilizes Wormhole. And Wormhole essentially broadcasts all Pith price feeds to, I think Pith's connected to like 40 plus chains now. And I actually wish I could show you guys the graph. We might have to put it in the show notes, but there's this really cool, like, here's Pith and then Pith with Wormhole. And then it just goes like this in terms of, I think it's, I forgot the actual metric. It was maybe like amount of apps integrated or monthly active users, something like that. And so that's the use case I immediately point to. And it's like a really good example of like interoperability to scale a business. Like that's literally what's happening there. Some of the other ones that aren't as, I would say, asset related, governance. So we actually do think that governance is going, like cross-chain governance is going to be really important. For those of you who don't know, Wormhole actually secures 5 Uniswap deployments. So the governance that happens between them. And essentially, so Uniswap's home, if you will, is on ETH. But they've got deployments across a number of different chains, and most people know this. But if a vote happens on the home chain, how do you make sure that that vote is then you know, implemented on BNB, on Avalanche, et cetera? So Wormhole secures essentially that message, those messages that ultimately enact those votes, which is not a lot of like message volume. But if you think about being able to like rug those votes, like it's the security and governance of the entire protocol, right? Like you could turn fees up to X, Y, and Z. Like you could do, you know, whatever you wanted for the most part. So like there's a lot of trust that comes with something like that where messaging is absolutely required. I think those are two good examples, but I think you bring up a good point. Like asset transfer is definitely the main, not even asset transfer, but just like this unifying of liquidity is like really what the goal is. And it's, you know, 80-85% of the use cases today.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, there's the Oracle example, which I like because this conversation's, I think, grounded in the token. And Chainlink, the biggest Oracle, like charges in their natural token for every like API call or Oracle update, right? Or to even add Chainlink onto your chain. So is there like anything in the roadmap or anything like on the deck to potentially charge for those messages in the W token?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll start by just answering directly. There's no current plan to monetize push messaging in particular. No current plan. But I think like, and this could be like a good opportunity for me to like dig on a Chainlink, right? Like a competitor of Pith, a competitor in some sense of Wormhole. But I think from a business perspective, at some point, you know, if we can't like dog on protocols for not making revenue, and at the same time then be like, oh, they're charging for an integration, right? Like it makes sense to me that, you know, Chainlink does that. Whether the costs themselves make sense on an individual basis, I can't comment on. I'm not as familiar, but like at some point these protocols need a way to monetize the protocol and you know, make it more sustainable, if you will. But I don't think we can have our cake and eat it too, to like say, you know, oh, I can't believe this protocol is charging. You know, they have to, protocols have to be around for a long period of time. Well, so there's no current plan on our end to monetize messaging or push messaging, but you know, I think that it's not unreasonable in the future to do something around potentially pull messaging or more, I think, involved products that you can build on top of the interoperability.
stack.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to compete with projects that aren't charging if you're charging, especially at their early stage. It doesn't really make a ton of sense for a lot of crypto. And also there's like this ethos of like public goods and early stage tech that doesn't necessarily need revenue. But, you know, some people have other opinions and people capitalize on opportunities. Speaking about opportunity, this is the funniest transition ever. We just put out a modular ecosystem map. Wormhole was in there under interoperability. So why does Wormhole deserve to be in the modular ecosystem map? Why is Wormhole modular?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's like two ways I can answer this. One is like, how is Wormhole the actual protocol itself modular? And then how does it help with like modularity? So there's this funny like saying in crypto that I come back to a lot is like, it's all chains and bridges, depending on how you define bridge, of course. But like everything we're doing is like connecting chains and bridges at the end of the day. You know, oftentimes like L2s and things like that, I think like they get maybe like this Ethaline glossiness, but like there's effectively it's a bridge, right? Connecting the settlement layer and the execution layer. The native bridge is effectively a lock and mint bridge, right? Going from mainnet to these L2s. So, you know, interoperability is just inherently, because it is connecting, it's at its core, what it's doing is sharing state between two chains. It's going to be at the core of anything modular. Anytime it's not a monolithic stack where you're not just vertically integrating things, you're going to need to share some sort of state or something with the chain, right? Or you're going to take out data availability, right? Out of the kind of the consensus, the data availability in the execution. There's like always some sort of like a message that needs to be sent that's you can trust is secure and decentralized. So, you know, I kind of view things in a more simplistic fashion and think we've in crypto really like marketed things up quite a bit to make them a little bit more complex in some instances, but Wormhole itself is, you know, actually going to be very modular. I tweeted something about this the other day. Like 2024 is going to be what I think call like the modularization of the messaging layer and the optimization of the asset layer. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So, the messaging layer today is like very much so, and it's hard to explain without getting too technical, but like, you essentially have a way to verify messages cross chain. So again, I talked about Wormhole being the guardians. You have a way to like relay that message. So it's essentially another network that picks up that message that's been verified and drops it off, almost like a mailman, right? To the other house, to the other chain. And then you have your contracts on either side that are like the inbox outbox almost, if you will. Now what's going to happen is you're going to start to see like the swapping in and out of these components along the way. And so for today, for Wormhole, focus on Wormhole, we have the guardians. It's like the best, it's, you could consider it like our consensus mechanism if we're thinking about it from like a chain perspective. We could swap out the way in which we come to consensus, essentially. And that's going to be with, for us, it's going to be with ZK. And we can go into that a little bit in our recent AMD partnership. But that's a modular component, right? It's like you're swapping in and out how you come to consensus on a message cross chain. And so that for Wormhole right now, like I said, it's the guardians and it'll be ZK. And you can also do that with the relayer network, right? You can make the relayer so like anyone can come and stand up a relayer and relay that message. But the asset layer, the optimization, I know that's not as, you know, involved with modularization, if you will. I think when I talk about optimization, I talk about the asset layer for like way too long, but there's almost like this, like a brief history. It's like lock and mint bridges, which still have their purposes, you know, to some extent today, people will demonize them and I get why, but like there's still ETH on ETH is immutable. It can't exist anywhere else. If you want to bring it to Solana, it has to be locked and minted. But like now we're starting to see burn and mint. We're starting to see cross-chain swaps. Really what we're starting to see now is intents, right? So the way I think about it is we're continuously optimizing how to get asset A on chain A to asset B on chain B. And so the 2024 is going to be like modularizing this messaging layer to make it so you can like connect more chains in a more secure way using parts from here. And then the asset's going to, it's just going to be easier. It's going to be like a centralized exchange when it comes to assets on Solana, on Sui, on Base, on Mainnet. You're not going to have to like go through the pain as much of waiting for a while to bridge, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully that kind of was a little bit more than why does Wormhole belong on the modular map, but hopefully it was kind of helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very helpful. And I think, you know, we've had conversations about the separation of these two layers. I think it's important to note that even when you are sending an asset on the asset layer, it still requires a message. It's just you can do some funky things on the asset layer to like aggregate or batch messages and make it maybe more affordable for the entire batch of those transactions. And then it's very cool the things that are happening on the intent spectrum to like even achieve transactions quicker than finality with some of these market makers that are taking that finality risk and kind of like bottling it up. And then fronting that capital on the destination chain so that the user ends up with the quickest, cheapest transaction possible. So let's get into the partnership with AMD because like the hardware is something that people don't talk about very often. And we've spoken about ZK technology and how it is almost like just, it is that evolution that everyone sees off in the distance, but it's like, it's still just a ways away. So how do you envision getting to ZK? And then when you're ultimately there, what does ZK in Wormhole mean?
Yeah. Great questions. So
we're investing a lot in this. We're taking a bet on ZK. And I think a lot of people, when they think of ZK, the main like commercial use case they think of is privacy, which makes sense. And it's definitely a use case. For us, though, it's this concept of trustlessness, and I'll get into that. But Wormhole itself, just to like take a quick step back. So Wormhole has three kind of like core contributors. We have the Foundation, Wormhole Labs, and X Labs. Very like similar model, very like common model for protocols. We just have additional labs, but we actually have even more contributors than that. So we have Succinct Labs contributing to the ZK stack, Lurk Labs, Spoken. We're announcing another one soon. The idea is it's like we're trying to work with some of the what we think are the best like ZK researchers in the space to bring it to like application. And it's actually been pretty interesting, like on this journey. Privacy I mentioned is a good commercial use case. What a lot of I think ZK teams realize is bridging is a good ZK use case. And a lot of what is happening is like, you know, we've been hearing zero knowledge for so long. And we're actually moving from I think like research to application. And a lot of that is going to show itself in my opinion. Well, actually, I know it will. I'm seeing it. A lot of it will show itself in the bridging component of things. Now, how does that fit in with Wormhole? And why is that important? So I talked about the Guardian Network. It all comes down to trust. So whenever you use a protocol, like what entities are you trusting? This is a common question we're asked in crypto. Something that's very top of mind for us. For Wormhole, you are trusting these large staking companies to not collude, right? If 13 of them technically came together, they could, you know, fudge a message and cause probably, you know, some pretty serious damage on the network, right? So you are trusting these 13 entities to a certain extent. Now, the goal with bridging, because so much, and I talked a little bit about like it being this public utility, so much is going to like be built on it, rely on it in the background. The goal of bridging is to be as trustless as possible, meaning like, how do we actually take the humans out of the situation, right? Like human error or like human greed is a thing. We've seen this in multiple types of exploits in this space. How do you take that out? So at its like highest level, zero knowledge is a way to prove something is true with math instead of relying on, you know, 13 out of 19 guardians to come to consensus. And so for Wormhole, we view that as one of the more secure ways to attest to the state of a chain, which is, again, remember, verification is just part of interoperability. And so for us, part of like our rollout plan, and we will, I'll say this now live, like we will see this in 2024 for Wormhole. Our plan is to give optionality to the developer, right? Like you choose your security configuration. Like let's say you want to go cross-chain and you're fine with the Guardians, right? Guardians are live across 30 plus chains. You want more chains and you're fine with the security assumptions, you can choose to use the Guardians. Or you say, I want to use these ZK Lite clients, but maybe at the first, at least, it's only across 5 chains. But, you know, security is super important for you because you're building, you know, X, Y, and Z protocol where that's, you know, security is the most important thing. So that again is where that modular component kind of like peeks its head out again, is like you choose the security. And for us, you know, I also talked a little bit about like these Twitter announcements having like their like one day, which is great, but like you don't actually realize a lot of the work sometimes that goes into some of this. And AMD, you know, is year plus kind of partnership that we worked on. And the idea here is quite simple. Like, you know, there's no need to overcomplicate it. Like ZK proofs take a lot of computation and they need really, really good hardware to get to. And we have to think about the user, the stack, like all the way up to me using, you know, an app on my computer. It takes a lot of computation and a lot of, I'll just use the word like acceleration to get to a point where you can quickly prove something's true and still provide the same user experience that you would maybe today. Our goal is to make it better. Like, you know, today with a lot of bridging, you have to wait for finality, like you said, Robbie. Some intents confront finality using, you know, market makers essentially. But for ZK, it's like we want to go from, let's say it takes 30 minutes to prove something. We want to go as quickly as possible. And that's where AMD is partnering with us to provide us with the hardware to make that happen.
Yeah, that's bullish because sometimes in crypto, when you see partnerships with big Web 2 companies, people just are like, oh my God, here we go.
Don't get me started.
I bet you heard some of that actually.
Oh yeah, for sure. Although I don't know if the
AMD partnerships as good as the Jensen arm touch we just saw. It's a pretty big crypto partnership.
That is pretty good.
These arm touches are getting nuts.
They're getting nuts.
The partnership with AMD, when I first heard about it, I was like, wow, this is like a full circle moment for crypto. Because we started started proof of work. Then we went into like this big like proof of stake meme crypto economic security.
Anti-environment crypto, like save the world.
It's only there because we believe in it. Now we're getting back to like, wow, like these machines are actually committing hardware and like resources to securing these ZK proofs. And it's like ZK brought us back to proof of work. It feels very full circle.
It does.
A lot of things in this space are weirdly full circle, though. Like, but yeah, in particular, this, yes, it does. Lots of hardware to make on-chain happen.
And ZK happen, yeah.
Yeah. So then what is a ZK powered wormhole future look like?
I mean, I like to talk in user terms just because sometimes I feel like we can get really technical in the weeds and not like see how it affects the user. So let's just continue to use asset use cases. We've established that those are definitely like a very important use case and the predominant use case today for like interoperability. So to me, a user, I actually think it'll happen at the developer level, but if the developer wants to give that to the user as like an option to choose in the front end, they can. But the developer will ultimately choose the config. So let's use Portal as the example, right? Like easy cross-chain, most people know it as a bridge, but like now it does swaps, etc. But it's like, how do you get any asset from any asset to other any asset across all different chains? So Portal could essentially say like, you know what? We're going to swap everything, all verification to ZK. Ideally, like the proving time is the same as what it would be today. Most bridging done today is based on finality. So like ideally it's still feature parity there, but they swap it in the background and the user doesn't know. They could expose it to the user, right? Like you could have a front end that says, hey, this ZK transaction is like super, super secure, trustless, and they charge an additional fee. I actually don't know if that's happening. I'm like projecting and you know what could be in the world, right? But like, hey, you need like are you transferring $1 million? Oh, here's this like what we would consider this like a highly secure verification cross chain, pay a little extra to make that happen and wait a little longer maybe, but eventually not. So I think like in its simplest form, that's kind of what we'll see, but most of it will be abstracted from the user. It'll just be like a secure way to go cross chain.
Awesome. Cool. Rob and I are quite bullish on ZK. I think we think that it's going to push the future forward. And I think that you could from a brand perspective as well, you could find a lot of arguments about like different kind of like centralization points and things by introducing a lot more verifiability.
Yep. We're always, you know, proof is in the pudding. We're obviously very bullish on it too.
Yeah. Cool. Well, as we kind of wrap up here, we covered a lot. Obviously people are kind of jumping from the hills, excited about Wormhole Token, kind of circling back to the start here. You know, we touched on governance and we touched on kind of airdrops and how you guys plan to distribute the token, some of the ZK stuff. So what does the next 3 to 6 months look like for Wormhole in specific? How are you gonna kind of, I mean, really, how are you thinking about this? Like what changes from a builder's perspective as well as post token? And then specifically, like kind of what are you guys focused on?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'll like put it in two buckets. I think the core contributors will still be shipping products, and there's a lot that we're launching really soon, and I'll touch on that in a second. But also the goal is actually to shift a lot of the decision making, you know, as quickly as possible to token holders and also the guardians. The guardians will play a role in governance too. So there will be kind of like work streams along that path and then work streams along this path, and they'll start to converge more and more over time. And so for us, there's like two really big things we're focused on. Optimize, we talked a little bit about intents. We talked about like optimizing the asset layer. We're doing a lot around that. So we're contributing to, you know, what we consider like liquidity layers and things like that. There's a lot out there already. We think we have some pretty novel designs. So we'll be launching some that a lot sooner than later. I know some people talk about what we're launching in crypto and it could be 6 months from now. That's definitely not the case with this. And then I would say the other thing is native token transfers. And, you know, we probably could do a whole episode on this, but there's this idea of how do you take a token cross chain, right? And there's really, I think, like, I don't want to say two ways. There's a number of ways you can do it, but most of tokens, I think Portal might be like one of the biggest conduits to tokens going cross chain, catalyst to tokens going cross chain that there is. Like, there's been thousands that have gone cross chain via Portal, which is crazy. And the idea is that it's like bridge owned contracts. You know, it's battle tested. It's been around for a while. It comes with additional security features, but you're kind of giving up rights to the essentially like who's controlling that bridge. In the instance of Wormhole, would be the Guardian network, right? So you don't own the contracts, but super out of the box, battle tested. Here are your like additional security features you can put in place. And then there's the other side of things. If you want to choose, the goal for us is optionality. There's developer owned contracts, and then everything that comes with that. So you'll hear a lot of different things now. You hear OFT. I know Axelar has their own version. I know there's XERC20. For us, that's native token transfers. It's developer owned contracts. It's burn and mint, and there's no vendor lock in. So the actual developer will get to choose if they want to use Wormhole, if they want to use another competitor, it doesn't matter. And we think that's really important for us. And that was actually a big stance and a departure from a lot of the other, I guess what people will call standards out there. So those two big things, I think from a product perspective, we're really focused on outside of a lot of other things like ZK, et cetera. But those two in particular, I think are important. And then, yeah, like I said, on the governance side, the most immediate thing we're focused on is multi-chain governance. And we think it's extremely important. We've learned more and more going through this process how it's a very difficult problem to actually solve. Being able to like coordinate all these votes across all these different chains, meet users where they are, and execute on, you know, a given proposal. And so we think it's, again, we're taking like putting our flag in the ground saying that's important for an interoperability protocol. That's an immediate focus. And then everything else that comes beyond that, right? So we talked a little bit about network expansion, queries, and other monetization methods and mechanisms. So I think both of those will be happening in parallel. We got a big enough team, and yeah, we're excited about 2024.
Awesome.
Yep.
And
just the beginning. Just
the beginning. We're still early, guys. We're still early.
It's like you start all over again. You build for 3 years, and then you start all over again.
Yeah, seriously.
Just in a different
kinda
way.
Feels like it. Kind of feels like
I bet. Well, thank you, Robinson, for coming on.